Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Hey, it's the Deceptively Fast podcast. I apologize. I was trying to put these out every Tuesday, but as you all know, I had surgery last week. And I had a really hard time coming back from the anesthesia, which shocked me because I used to just pop right out of surgery and be right up and at them. But I kind of was like in a fog for about a week. But I'm bringing my friend Drew back on this week. I did a bad job of explaining to you guys exactly who Drew was last week. You can follow him on Twitter, where he's now up to 13 followers. He had been mired at, I think, about 9 before he came onto this podcast and achieved worldwide fame. Drew Hodgdon, D-R-E-W, Hodgdon, H-O-D-G-D-O-N. Follow him on Twitter. And Drew played at Arizona State. He was with the Texans for a few years. Where'd you go right after the Texans, Drew?
Baltimore.
That's right. Oh, well, let's jump right in. Did you happen to see any of Wednesday afternoon football?
I did.
Okay. I want to ask your question. Ask you a question about the end of the first half when Baltimore was trying to run four plays with very little time left down near the end zone. They ran the ball on second down with no timeouts left. And there was a huge scrum right at the goal line. Time kept running down, and the defensive line was doing what defensive linemen do in two-minute situations. They were trying to keep the ball carrier from getting up. So they're kind of leaning on him, and Harbaugh's flipping out on the sidelines. They finally get the ball in play. They throw a pass. It falls incomplete. So instead of having time left to kick a field goal, time has expired. My take on this, Drew, as a former defensive lineman, is that that's just gamesmanship, baby. And Harbaugh should have expected that. You can't expect to be able to run a play up the gut on goal line and be able to get back and get the ball in play in 15 seconds or less in the NFL, while also expecting a delay of game penalty on that, like in that specific area of the field.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. If you're in the Ravens locker room, your job is to be as furious and irate as humanly possible and have no objectivity whatsoever.
Yeah.
If you're outside the locker room, it was an idiotic move.
Right. I argued with somebody on Twitter about it he is like this football idealist who is saying, well, it's unsportsmanlike, you see. Yeah, fine. I don't even care if you call it unsportsmanlike. Harbaugh's got to understand the way it's called. Like in the middle of the field when that happens, you know, it's shady, and guys, defensive backs will get kind of cocky with it, and they'll really lean on guys and put their hips into them, but they toe the line and they get off, and they'll get a delay of game call if they're too extreme with it. But down in like in a scrum and in a pile on the goal line, I don't think you're ever going to get that call.
Yes. Sportsmanship stops exactly where the line, when refs throw the flag is. That's exactly where sportsmanship stops.
Yeah, that's right.
Like that's the apex of sportsmanship and personal fouls.
No, you're right. Because I mean, if you take pass interference, for instance, you know, that rule is only as good as it is being enforced. So defensive back, like if a defensive back were to be a complete sportsman about things, he would just play with his hands completely off the entire way down the field. Right. But right. If you understand that, okay, no, there's a little bit of a gray area there, and you try to push it up right to the envelope of the gray area, and that's what you have in this. I'm not disappointed. I'm kind of proud of you that as an offensive lineman, you at least understand the stuff that we would have to resort to.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's the same, you know, the expertise I have, I guess, is relative to being inside the box.
Yeah.
So it's the exact same thing when defensive linemen would try to prevent us from sliding off and getting up to the next level.
Yeah.
It's part of it, and you expect it just like they expect us to just hold them to oblivion, you know, until we're white knuckled.
Do you have a hard time watching now, like now that you're an old guy and you can look at some of the rule changes? As an offensive lineman, when you watch guys zone block now where they're not allowed to cut on the backside, is it hard? Do you get frustrated just thinking about how hard that is now for those guys to pull that off?
I do and I don't. I mean, it's been interesting, the changes, as you've probably noticed over the last several years inside the box with respect to holding. You know, they've called holding on the defense more in the last couple of years than I think I saw in the previous 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they never would ever call that. And now at least you see, you know, a handful of those calls being made.
Which is, it's weird because they moved the umpire to behind the defensive line. So I always felt when we were playing that I had it tougher than the current guys, because the umpire used to be behind the defensive line, and every now and then an umpire would get knocked out because of it. Like I personally knocked out an umpire once. I turned to Chase after a quarterback threw the ball. And like I think I was actually dropping in coverage. Like I was like 5 yards behind a line of scrimmage, just in a little zone drop as a nose tackle. And I turned to run. And all I saw was a color that wasn't my own jersey color. And I just shoved him. And I remember to this day, his name was Garth DeFelice. Really cool name. I shoved him and he tripped over somebody else, like as I was shoving him. So it was almost like the worst version of the old schoolyard prank where you push somebody over somebody, and he went down hard face first, cold cocked, like out right. Cold. And I always I felt bad about that because I knew it. I mean, you know when you do something and you're like, I was halfway through the shove and I realized like, oh crap, this is an official, not a player, but I gotta get to the ball. And I kept shoving. And I looked back and there he was motionless on the turf.
So with some percentage of your brain in there, you're thinking like, I'm also going to maybe teach him a lesson. I'm just going to kind of let him know. Maybe you shouldn't be here.
He could have gotten himself out of the way.
Like, yeah.
I mean, he's not an unarmed man. Well, he should have armed himself.
Yeah. It's a dangerous job. Maybe.
The other time I did anything like that where I felt like, okay, I know what I'm doing, even though, like, you know, when you're a kid and you're doing something and you're almost trying to see what happens if you do something bad.
Yeah, of course.
One year we were playing in the preseason. There was a huge point of emphasis on leaving the ball at where the play ends, because officials were getting sick of chasing, you know, guys would get up and toss the ball or spike it or whatever. So they were getting sick of chasing these balls all over creation. So big point of emphasis was leave the ball exactly where it is. So we were playing the Dolphins in the preseason and we had a big stop on third down, tackle for a loss in the backfield, and Ricky Williams kind of coughed the ball up as he hit his back. So it landed right in my hands, like as I was tackling him, and I started to get up and I looked around and there was no official to my left or to my right. So I was like, well, and I just dropped it right on Ricky's chest, and they threw the flag, and Ricky got up, and you know, Ricky, who's stoned all the time and the most pleasant kid in the world, Ricky was furious. Like Ricky was all up in my face. But in my mind, I really did. I felt like I was doing something that was okay and that I should get away with, even though in my heart, I also knew I was kind of being a prick, you know? So I was.
You felt like you fell on the appropriate side of the line?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I felt like, hey, come on, by the letter of the law, I'm leaving the ball exactly where it was supposed to be. And I said, I can remember as Ricky was all mad, and I was kind of taken aback that Ricky was coming after me. Cause like, I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen Ricky Williams. Yeah,
if anything, I've exploited this rule perfectly.
Yeah,
and no one's appreciating this.
And that's, so Ricky was yelling at me, and I'm kind of, and it's a preseason game, you know? And
right.
I'm like, Ricky, no, baby.
I was talking. You're misreading. Like, you're misreading.
Girlfriend or something. Like, no, Ricky, baby. No, I didn't say baby, but it was that tone. Yeah. It's like, no,
no,
Ricky,
baby.
No, Ricky, yeah. Listen to me, Ricky. And they threw the flag, and then I left, and then they were in nickel the rest of the drive. And I remember Gary Walker and Robert Smith weren't too happy about like having to take 9 extra snaps. while I was on the sideline drinking Gatorade.
You did this. You did this to us, Seth. You and your shenanigans. You're such a problem child.
So yeah. the reason I called you today, Drew, is that I wanted to talk to you about Will Fuller and Bradley Roby, two players for the Texans, who I don't know if you're aware of this or not, if you're following this, but they're both suspended for PEDs. And Will Fuller first came out and announced it on Instagram, and he said that he'd gotten a supplement from a medical professional that he'd been getting some treatment from, and it was tainted or it had something in it that was off label. I think Will Fuller's story was that the doctor thought that it was okay, but it was not, like that old tale. And then Bradley Roby came out, defensive back for the Texans, cornerback for the Texans, and said that he was getting suspended too. He had a slightly different version of the story. Turns out they were both going to the same quote unquote medical professional. I don't know what kind of guy it was. But my first instinct with any of that stuff is always, I always get defensive of the players themselves. Cause I think these days, almost every athlete claims that it was a tainted supplement, or that it was a doctor that thought that he could take this fertility drug or something.
Right.
But I feel like there, I don't know what the percentages would be, but I do feel like a certain amount of time, it is true that the guys are genuinely innocent. And I feel bad for the guys who are genuinely innocent, because I feel like most people that cover the sport or pay attention always assume they're always lying. Where are you on that? Do you always assume they're lying?
I think that what's happened, no matter what, in the consciousness, I guess it depends on how old the sports fans are at this point. But I remember it was when I was in college, when the Belko fiasco was like in full tilt.
Yeah.
And you had the series of Major League Baseball players in front of Congress just swearing up and down that they would never, ever cheat or besmirch their reputation in that way.
Well, and it was Rafael Palmeiro with the Palmeiro wag. Yeah. Was the really notable one.
I mean, it was
that,
like,
was like, that was such a good
5
lesson.
Minutes later.
Yeah. It was, like it was a such a good lesson out. For young people to see, like, man, you would watch Rafael Palmeiro and think, of course, there's no way in hell. Like,
yeah.
You learned so much about human nature there. Like, just how adamant and convincing somebody can be, that it almost feels like there's no possible way they could be lying that hard.
Absolutely. Same thing with like Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
You know, and these like huge name athletes who are just the face of their sport entirely. So after we've all been conditioned to see that, it's you can't fight, you know, human nature to just assume that everyone's totally full of it. I think that, you know, to your point, it's the assumption also, especially with football, I think, is that everyone is on steroids. Mm-hmm. So it's like the expectation is such that, yeah, naturally they're just finally catching them. They're just
right. Or they just don't care. Right. Like right. I think a lot of fans just don't care, cause they assume that a lot of guys are on them, or that like, hey, it's such a brutal sport, why not? Like give them a chance to, and I've barely even stopped trying to explain it, but I think the number of guys that are probably doing something illegal is so
small
compared to what people think, especially like, I honestly, thinking back on teams I was on in the NFL, and I think it's worse. I mean, I think it's way worse in high school, because very few places, you know, test the year round randomly for it, and kids can get stuff pretty much anywhere they want on the internet. I think it's worse college. It depends. I mean, it's a lot harder to get away with, but there's some ways some guys can, but in the NFL, I always figured on any team I was on, there always seemed like there might be a couple of guys, like two or three, that maybe did something. It's just the risk
didn't
reward.
Didn't you feel like you kind of knew though?
Yeah.
You don't think so?
I always felt like, cause I always thought about it, and I just never knew what you can actually get like away with. Like, I don't know if I'd like to think it was morality that prevented me from doing it, but really it was more that like, whatever you can actually get away with didn't seem like it was going to be enough to make a substantial difference, you know?
Right.
Like, yeah, guys would get caught, like David Boston got caught. And a lot of that's what it was, Drew. A lot of the guys that I was like pretty sure probably were, it seemed like they'd get caught eventually.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
you know, there are always rumors about various guys, and then they, eventually they get caught.
I remember, it was the handful of guys that, to your point, like David Boston, the ones that it just seemed like, come on, this is happening. We all know this is happening. I mean, there were a handful of guys that like got drafted, and it was just this like open, you know, everyone, the open secret, everyone knew.
Yeah.
You know, like Todd Stussy, I remember my rookie year, you know, when you were there in Houston too. And that was, I want to say he was like in maybe Minnesota or maybe it was Tampa, where he was like into the end of his career, but he was an offensive lineman who had like 1% body fat and was like 300 pounds and could like run like a 4.8. And you're thinking like, you're 40.
Like, what? Some of the guys, when they would all of a sudden just get shredded when they were 35.
Totally. You know, and I'm like, there are a handful of guys like that, like Harrison too. I felt like, I was just like, this is not, you know.
Well, no. And that's where I knew so many guys that barely, like, they couldn't be bothered to take creatine because it was just a pain in the ass. You know what? I knew that these guys weren't getting a needle stuck in their ass once or twice a week. But I might have been naive about HGH, especially, and I think it seemed like a lot of guys started potentially getting into HGH for a spell there before they'd got more advanced with the testing. So maybe I'm naive about that, but I'd always, because the same thing when HGH for the longest time, you could get away with it. Everything I'd read about it was that, like, if you weren't using it in combination with steroids, it didn't seem like it really helped you all that much anyway. So I that was another risk reward. I didn't see the benefit in it.
Yeah. You might get 5 or 10% hotter, but I don't think your performance is going to really improve that much. You know,
like crow's feet.
Like your crow's feet are going away. Seth, your jawline looks fantastic.
I figured the GM would say, you know, Seth, I was getting ready to release you because you're getting old, but I can't look at this face and think that age has affected you one bit.
But I can't stop but feel that you are so virile. I think the thing that gets lost on the fans, beyond the fact that they assume that everyone is that the freakiest guys most definitely are, which my experience was always like the freakiest guys in every team were definitely not.
Oh yeah. We're barely lifting.
Yes. Like, yes. 1000%. The guys that were the most freak over the top specimens, I am certain were not. I mean, it was like Mario Williams when we were there.
Yeah. There's no way in hell. That's a really good point. Like, there's no way in hell Mario Williams was doing anything.
And
he worked out. But I don't think people really understand how freakish some of like the very like the 1% guys are. And I did, especially, I knew like Tony Brackens. Like, he's another guy that he didn't have a rocked up physique or anything, but he went to University of Texas and played in Jacksonville for a long time, was Pro Bowl a bunch of times, was like freakishly naturally talented. And he would lift and stuff. But every now and then he would decide to like actually lift hard for 2 weeks. And it was like in the course of 2 weeks, he would all of a sudden look like Lou Ferrigno, you know? Right. And there's just no possible way he was on anything. He was just that naturally gifted. There's another guy, Kyle Brady, I knew, tight end. He couldn't lift. Like, he had to be very careful. Like, he was limited in how heavy he could go because he'd get too big and muscle bound. Because he was like 6'6", 280 as a tight end, no body fat at all. And he wasn't like extremely muscly or anything. He just would get, but he would get too big if he started lifting, you know, but like he could have been an offensive tackle easily.
Yeah, I think the tight ends are kind of that position group that is the underrated freak group on the teams. Like,
so that was the other things that came up today on our afternoon show on Sports Radio 610. Brandon Scott and Show Hughley were having a disagreement over, in this Texans situation, Romeo Crennel hadn't yet talked to Will Fuller and Bradley Roby, you know, as of this afternoon on Wednesday, or I guess on Wednesday morning. So it had been a day or two since all the information had come out. And they were having a disagreement about what Romeo Crennel should say to him. And a whole lot of that's kind of Texan specific because he's an interim coach and everything. So that's not necessarily relevant. The thing that it made me think of was there's kind of still, I think, like a don't ask, don't tell policy when it comes to head coaches and steroids. I think, like with Romeo Crennel, think about him. He was coaching back before they were even testing in the NFL for steroids. And I think coaches always are a little bit of like, well, I don't know what guys are doing and I don't want to know because maybe they're doing it just to keep up with other guys around the league. Cause I can't remember a head coach in the NFL in 10 plus years ever telling like the team, don't do steroids or we don't want you doing this or anything. It's like it feels weird to even think about because I never even thought that that would be something a head coach would say.
Right. I don't think, I think you're right. I don't remember it even remotely being mentioned.
Yeah.
Let alone, you know, they would talk about, I mean, especially Kubiak, I remember talking about, you know, going out, drinking, things of that nature. Maybe a couple times they brought up like, please don't smoke blunts in public and or in the hotel room immediately before the game, you know, but it wasn't like,
wait, were you there during the KC3? That was when the three guys, it was
that
Sam
was right
Montgomery.
After. Yeah, the draft picks.
Yeah, the three young players got caught smoking a cigar-type substance in the bathroom the night before the Kansas City game. I think that was 2011, 2012, yeah.
Right.
A year ago.
Kubiak,
they'd give you those kinds of stories, but never kind of a don't do PEDs story.
Which I think is smart because, I mean, I don't think you really want them policing that part of it. You want it to be a third party, essentially the NFL managing that.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, because once you get, now you're opening them up to which team is more stringent on it, which team has a reputation for being looser. I just don't think you even want to just keep it completely siloed.
Yeah. It had never struck me until Brandon texted me and asked me about it. Because he and Show were having this argument before their show. And it just struck me as odd that it never even once occurred to me that that's something that a head coach should be doing. And
right.
Not that I'm trying to throw anybody under the bus or anything. I don't think any of my college coaches ever did, or maybe not even my high school coaches, but where we were, I don't think anybody was ever on them. Like in my piddly little league,
it might be a generational thing too, where it's like, to your point, you know, some like Cornell, where he comes from a generation where there were guys like, you know, like the Pittsburgh Steelers in their heyday too, where it was like every single one of those dudes to a T.
Right.
Was just juiced to the gills, like their veins were, they were so vascular, it was like 3D off the screen.
Yeah.
You know, and
the picture of Mike Webster, where it just looks like a cartoon.
Oh, yeah. It's just like, outrageous. Yeah. It's like Lou Ferrigno, like post Hulk situation. And, you know, I like my offensive line coach in college played in the NFL for like 13 years. And it was like when it was Gastineau and all those guys, you know, and he just openly would talk about it when he was coaching us in college. Like he would just say flat out, you know, that they were, oh yeah, we would just take turns, go in the locker room after practice. And we would just, you know, shoot each other up. And it was so casual.
Yeah.
Like, oh, right. Yeah, of course you would.
I was talking to an old scout about this guy that had played in the NFL and then, you know, been in the league forever as a scout. And he said a lot of these young scouts, he's like, these guys don't get it. Because, you know, this guy played back when everybody was doing whatever they were doing in the 70s and 80s. And he's like, man, I've seen some of these guys. And I would tell scouts, like, you can't trust this kid. When he gets to the NFL, there's no way he's going to be the same. Like, what are you talking about? Ah, no, he'll be fine. and then lo and behold, because he can see it. He's less naive about it. Like every now and then there'd be like a guy in training camp that was like a rookie free agent and just looked like a bodybuilder. And then all of a sudden would mysteriously disappear like 2 weeks after the first round of drug tests.
I felt like it was more so in college where I would see those guys and you just knew, you know, that the whatever ability they had to even compete was only because of just they had the girth or the strength to like hold the point, but they weren't athletic. They couldn't move. They couldn't do anything else. You know
what? I told somebody that asked me on Twitter that I'd tell him what my worst injury was. He asked what my worst injury was. And I kind of thought I'd rather talk about what my dumbest injury ever was. And the one that came up, the one that first came to mind was in 2005. It was the last game of the season. I'm sorry, it was 2004. It was the very last game of the season. And the field at NRG Stadium, Reliance Stadium at the time, was somehow like, oh, that's right. It was that old pallet system. The turf sucked. Yeah. Like, it was really, really all torn up. It was wet. It was like wet and sloppy somehow at an indoor stadium. And I was out on the field, in the first couple series, like during warmups and during the first series, I was thinking, man, I got to change my cleats. I don't have enough grip. I got to put the longer spikes in. So after the first series or so, I go to the sideline and I was all spatted up and everything. And just like out of sheer laziness, I just said, screw it. Let me see. I'm going to go out one more series and see how it feels. So the very next series, I go out in this meaningless last game of the year. I'm a free agent, by the way, after this game, this meaningless game, last game of the year. I get combo blocked by the guard in the center. So I got like 600 pounds coming down on me. I turn my hips and my shoulders to split the double team. And my rear foot just keeps on sliding. And I ended up doing... And so my foot keeps sliding. So I'm like, oh crap. I was about to do a horizontal split. Like I'm like the little karate dude there between the two chairs. Who am I thinking of?
Jerry Maguire.
No. The French guy with the splits and whatnot.
Oh, Van Damme.
Yeah. Jean-Claude Van Damme. Mm. So it's like, I'm Jean-Claude. So I'm like, all right, I got to flip my hips somehow. So I kind of like twisted back and I ended up doing like a full vertical split with both these guys on top of me. And I just felt, poop that pop in my, it felt like in my ass, like I'd gotten Forrest Gumped or something, like shot in my ass, but I did a full split and I kind of went into denial. They came out to get me and they started to have me stand up. I'd forgotten about this part of it until I started telling the story just now. So the trainers came out. I'm like, I think I'm okay. It doesn't really hurt or anything. It was a pop, but I think I'm fine. So they helped me up. I go to walk towards the sideline and like I almost collapsed completely. Like my leg gave out from me. And I remember hearing the crowd gasp. Like they had all just started to clap, like because I was walking off the field. I don't know if they even do that anymore, do they? Are we that unsportsmanlike that they clap when you come off the field?
I think it still happens. I think okay. You just don't notice.
I feel like everybody's like, screw this guy.
Yeah, we're all dead inside now.
This guy's screwing my fantasy league, even though he's just a defensive tackle. I heard the whole crowd like gasp, and it kind of freaked me out. I was like, did it look that bad? And it turns out I'd pulled my hamstring off my pelvis, and I feel so stupid about it to this day because like aside from the injury itself, like I was going to be a free agent that year. I ended up being a free agent. Like I took visits while I was like barely able to walk, but it was all because I was too lazy to change my shoes up. That's all I had to do was just change my shoes.
That's brutal timing.
Yeah. What was your dumbest injury?
I mean, I've had a handful, you know, but when
you got hit by a car,
I did get hit by a car. That's post-football though. So I don't know if that counts. If we're going all open to all injuries, that's a long list.
Yeah.
The football one, I mean, I ruptured my pec, tore it off the bone at the combine.
Oh, at the combine, like doing a bench press?
Doing the bench test.
Oh, what rep were you on?
4.
They didn't give you 4 as your number, did they?
They 100% did. So I had so it went down.
Oh, those 30. Are you serious?
Oh, and I had the guy who was standing over me too. So you probably know who it is. He had built up this like a bit of a reputation. He was all over, you know, like the NFL Network.
Yeah. He was different than I think when either, because it became more of a TV event. They got less and less strict with the form. They almost just wanted a big number. And that guy was all like, that guy would like almost damn make out with you beforehand. Right.
And he was like a psycho. He was a real psycho. And, you know, and I had tweaked it, you know, like a couple of weeks before and, you know, probably like you, I mean, I went in, like I had a shot at, you know, getting mid 30s.
Yeah.
Like maybe more, you know, and I was pretty strong at the time. And it was kind of one of these deals where, you know, you have everybody that you're training with, like, look, I mean, if you run well, put up some numbers, I mean, you're going to be like, you're going to be like the 3rd overall pick. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, sure. Yeah, let me do this. So, you know, I got in there and I'm like feeling pretty good, warmed up and got under it. And the adrenaline's going. So any concern about injuring yourself is just completely out the window.
Right.
And I had ran pretty well. I had, you know, done the rest of the stuff and performed pretty well. So, Yeah, I got started and I'm just like throwing it up and I'm thinking like, man, I'm really feeling myself. I'm going to do maybe 100 of these. And I got to like the fourth one and it wasn't one of those like, I think it's cramped. It was like, I felt it just fly off the bone, like in a hurry. And I was like, I couldn't even budget an inch off my chest. And I remember the guy, I stop immediately. I think everyone in here is watching me. Just act like you tweaked it. Act like you tweaked it and you still got a chance to pretend like you're fine and you can come back. And the guy's looking at me and he just goes, is that it? Is that it?
What a dick.
And I was like, you are.
What a dick. Are you kidding
me? Yeah, he was.
All right, now I'm going to have to remember his name. And call him a dick.
Yeah, so I think it was with the Browns. It was like a long time Browns strength coach.
Yeah, that guy was way over the top. It was he was trying to make it all about himself. It's just the bench press, exactly. Bro. It's like the dumbest event we do here at the combine. So then you couldn't run or anything, right?
No, I ended up doing the whole rest of the testing, and I was like in the top 10, I think, in most of the things, even with like just a blown out pack. So I ended up being weirdly satisfied with it.
Yeah.
And I did okay at the pro day, but I had to come back and do the physicals, and half the teams immediately were like, you have a ruptured back.
Yeah, especially, I feel like they've gotten cooler about that stuff now, but
right,
that was still back when it would have been like a deal killer. Let's see, I'm going to answer some of these questions. I told people I'd answer the questions, so now I have to answer the questions. Let's see. The shadiest medical professional you've ever gone to. But for me, I'm glad you brought up Belco earlier, because the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, run by Victor Conti, who was the guy that worked with a bunch of football players, baseball players, Barry Bonds, all these different guys. He had a couple of undetectable substances, the clear and the cream. And I've told this story before. I guess I've never quite told it in this detail. I actually paid Belco money in 1999 or 2000 or so, because I had a friend who was a bodybuilder who knew somebody at Belco or something, who said, hey, Seth, these guys do great work with, optimizing your diet and everything. And I'm like, all right, well, that's cool. So I'll give it a shot. And the first thing they tell you is, hey, we want to do a 24-hour year analysis and figure out, where your imbalances are and everything. So they're like, hey, look, so don't take any multivitamins or any supplements for 2 weeks beforehand. Right. So I didn't do any multivitamins or supplements for 2 weeks beforehand. And then I collect my urine for 24 hours in this huge bladder and send it off. And it was some ridiculous price. It was like, it was several hundred dollars, Right. I'm almost embarrassed to say what I think it was, but I think it was like $900 or something. Because Drew, this is super, super scientific stuff here. And I get the report back. And of course, the report says, well, the study shows that you need vitamins and supplements. And I'm like, yeah, you sons of bitches. I could have been, how about you let me take the test while I'm taking my like cheap over the counter stuff? Because the program they're suggesting is, hey, we're going to customize this vitamin for you and all these supplements. And then we're going to charge you like $3,000 a month to do it. And I thought to myself, this is cockamamie. This is BS. So I just said, screw it. I'm not doing it. And then I kind of forgot about Belco for like 2 years. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all this stuff starts happening. And I kind of, like in my mind, I was like, gosh, yeah, I remember them. All right, I guess somebody might call and ask me questions or something, because I'm guessing I'm in the database somewhere, and I don't know how, I don't know how meticulous their records are, because maybe if they're not meticulous, then my name will just be in there and they're going to want to talk to me. So I'll like get my story ready and everything. But apparently they were meticulous enough. But so these 2 years later, this bodybuilder bro that had first suggested that I go work with Belco calls me up and he's like, hey, Seth, man, I don't know. Listen, I'm kind of freaked out. I got these guys from Belco calling me and they're basically saying that they're going to get our names out of here, but it's going to cost like $100,000 to do it. And I'm like, dude, for one, like I didn't say it out loud. Like I don't believe that anybody's calling you. Like, I think you're calling me because like, that's what's going through my brain. But in my mind, I'm like, no. I told him this part. I said, listen, man, I didn't do a single damn thing with them other than give them some urine. So good luck with yourself and whatever you did. But I'm freaking cool as hell. Like, I don't have to worry about this. And he, like, his name never came up because he's like, he had no reason to. Yeah. He was a bodybuilder. He didn't need to hide it from anybody. You know, it wasn't right. Like he was competing naturally or anything.
Right.
So he was just like, so he's trying to, I think this guy was trying to squeeze me for like $100,000 for having done nothing at all. So that was my experience with Belco. Like, luckily my stinginess and general distrust of quacks, like, kept me from ever getting involved. Cause I do.
Well, wonder, and friends.
Yeah. What's that? Yeah.
And your distrust of friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And people you know.
He was an acquaintance. He wasn't a friend.
Yeah, got it. So he was outside the circle.
Because he always, like, I had talked to this guy. I had talked to him about, like, hey, he's all dialed in with his diet and everything. And he told me, like, hey, Seth, we can really tweak some things and I'll work with you. And I think he had this fantasy that he was going to be, you know, like my nutrition guru or something. Right. And it was like, after that Belco fiasco and just another couple of things. I'm talking about like the 2 years prior fiasco, right, when I just realized that I'm not going to pay money for that. And some of the other stuff he was telling me, I was like, I could read this in Muscle and Fitness, man. I don't need this. So I just, luckily I stepped away from him. But if I had gone through with Belco, I don't know. I would have, who knows? I don't know what they told those guys. Did they tell them they were taking steroids or did they just say like, hey, we got this awesome new supplement. And maybe I would have been, I don't know, maybe I would have been one of the Belco athletes.
I mean, my impression is that there had to have been a handful of guys at least that just assumed that it was just another supplement. It was just more scientifically at the forefront of whatever sports science was. And that, you know, they probably didn't really consider it to be anything overly nefarious or banned. But there were always like a handful of guys that were pretty sharp and knew what they were doing. You know,
especially if you're a baseball player and you're seeing what the other guys that are doing steroids are doing and swelling up and everything. And like all of a sudden you start swelling up.
Yeah, exactly. I saw Mark McGwire in the parking lot and he was moving cars with his forearms. I don't know how he did that. He's 50.
Yeah. But if they tell you though, if a medical professional tells you, hey, it's actually not illegal yet. You know, this is all you're doing is pushing the envelope. Like, it can be pretty convincing. Yeah. That's why that's when guys started doing Andro before it was, a lot of guys were doing Andro, like back with Mark McGwire and everything when he started doing it. Because like I knew football players who did Andro genuinely not understanding that, like, no, this will get you popped for steroids. It's just a precursor. Like, this is illegal too. And then when you have a doctor telling you, I don't know, I could have seen myself at that point getting duped in. If they hadn't tried me with a stupid, you know, like, honestly, if they'd been really upfront with it and probably not tried to rope me in with a stupid vitamin story, I might have done it. Who knows?
Yeah.
My name would have been shamed in front of my family and my friends, and yet I would have been a defensive player of the year.
Yeah, you could have been part of that multi-level marketing Belco empire.
Or at least kind of better. Let's see. Most intimidating offensive lineman you ever faced. That's from William Markham. He says probably not the right adjective. Now, I'm old enough now that I can say, okay, intimidating, it works for a few guys. Like, it's not, I don't think there are many guys I was ever like intimidated by. But there was Larry Allen, partly because he just came advertised so well. There was, I can remember going against Larry Allen my rookie year and being like, oh boy, this is going to be interesting. And I came in, like, I was a rookie and luckily I came in like in the fourth quarter. And I want to say the Cowboys kind of had the game in hand. And I didn't get like full go Larry Allen. I didn't get 100% Larry Allen. So I actually had some good snaps versus him. So I kind of like, that was a good confidence booster. And then I remember the next time I faced Larry Allen, he was actually playing left tackle at the time. And I was playing inside, but I had to come outside like as a loop container. And Drew, you know, that's like for a defensive lineman, you have to like, you start off over the guard. You're going to loop contain around the offensive tackle, like with no power leverage whatsoever, just in case the quarterback gets flushed that way.
The brilliant scheme.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like that. You're a sacrificial lamb. You're just trying to get out there, right? You're not going to get, unless the quarterback gets flushed, you're not going to make a play on it. And I came looping around Larry Allen, and he caught me just right. Like, and I felt as helpless as I've ever felt in my adult life. Like, I just went flying. And it felt like I was doing like the swimming in slow motion, like in midair towards the Cowboys sideline, and everything slowed down. And I could like look and see all the Cowboys players laughing at me as I was getting launched towards them. And that was the most helpless I ever felt on a football field. And it was because of Larry Allen.
What was funny about him too, is that he was, people I think maybe don't realize, like he wasn't a really tall guy at all. I mean, he was like, I think he was, I met him once or twice. And I want to say he's like shorter than I am. Like he's not a tall guy, but he had really long arms.
And he was really thick, like just
and
solid.
He was really heavy. And he was so strong. I mean, his punch was unreal.
Yeah. Leon Searcy, he was before your time, but he was a right tackle. You remember him? He had a boxing background. And like, so his punch was vicious. He'd catch guys with that left hand, that left inside hand. And just it was like getting the heart shockers. Like, and that was humiliating too. I never played against Leon Searcy, but I practiced against him because he was with the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. And like between him and Baselli, whenever I'd go against tackles, like you'd feel like a little boy sometimes because they were just so good. They would just stun you and you'd be dead in your tracks. And like Baselli, especially, his arms were so long that he'd hold you out and there's nothing you could do with it. Like a little kid, like, flailing his arms as his brother holds him away, like with his hand on his forehead. That's what I felt like with Baselli. Searcy just had, if anybody's looking for a book, Searcy's got I should have Searcy on the podcast soon because he has a book out right now about, like, I think it's about kind of the hard times he had when he was done playing. Cause Searcy was, anybody look up his book on Amazon. I've heard good things about it. Last question. This is from fan I know. Used to be Stroh's fan, I know, but I think he got suspended from Twitter for something. but he's Czechoslovakian American, Czech American. So he's very protective of the Kolachi and very offended by the bastardization of the Kolachi. Because Drew, I don't know if you know this or not. So fan I know asks, do they have Kolachis in upstate New York? That's where I'm from. The Kolachi in its Czech form, like in its pure form, is a sweet filling surrounded by bread, you know, sweet bread. So it's like a nice little circle of fruit or something surrounded by bread, where now like a lot of these kolachi places will also have pigs in a blanket that they call kolachis, but that's actually, I think, some other Czechoslovakian name.
So it's a lot of Polish, right?
So like a lot of Czech people get genuinely offended when all these non-kolachis are called kolachis. But to answer the question, no, I had zero clue what a kolachi was until the expansion draft in 2002. Like I came in, oh my gosh, we're sitting there waiting like before this press event the day before the expansion draft, and somebody asked me if I wanted a kolachi. It was Kevin Cooper, who was the assistant PR guy. And he asked me if I wanted a kolachi. And I was like, I don't know. What is a kolachi? And they looked at me like, oh, you don't know what a kolachi is, you rube. I'm like, I don't, I have zero clue what a kolachi is. So I ate a kolachi, which I've now learned is not genuinely a kolachi because I was, I tend to have an affinity for the pig in a blanket variety. And like I fell in love. It was love at first sight. That was like my introduction to the city of Houston was the kolachi. Which for anybody listening to this who doesn't live in I guess mostly Texas or Czechoslovakia, like nobody knows what a kolachi is.
No, they don't. I didn't know either when I got to. You're talking about Kolachi Factory, are you not?
Well, Kolachi Factory.
Like that's like where I felt like they were everywhere. And I never. Same thing when I got to Houston. And I think we would have them, you know, like sometimes they would bring them when we would have like away games.
Yeah.
They would like bring them in. It was usually like Steve McKinney would bring like 400 for 9 people. And, you know, and I just remember thinking like, these are nowhere else. And I don't know why. They're not in California. They weren't anywhere when I traveled for college games.
Yeah. I always thought they're not in North Carolina. You should open one somewhere, anywhere, because they're almost like the perfect unhealthy food. like either in their pure form, which is more like a dessert or like a breakfast dessert, or in their bastardized form, which is a hot dog or sausage and cheese, egg sausage and cheese, jalapenos, surrounded by this bread that's not like a sweet, sweet bread. It's just more like a delicious bread. And they're, yeah, Drew, I don't know. It's kind of, it's not just Kolache Factory. There's like more little boutique shops now too that have popped up, like more specialty type shops. And it feels like there's more independent Kolache shops now than there used to be. But yeah, they're huge in Texas. And I don't know why they haven't caught on elsewhere.
But this is also, the genesis
of I don't want to be the guy that tries to bring the Kolache to a place.
It seems like this is the spinoff for our Kolache podcast. Is this not Kolache Cast? Are we not doing that?
Seems like. Well, is Texas, I guess Texas must have been a real hot spot for Czechoslovakian immigrants. But it seems like I've known Czech immigrants in a lot of other places and never seen a Kolache before.
And they don't really have them in Chicago either. And I would think that like there's a population there, you know, it's like, I don't know what that's all about, but we'll get to the bottom of it.
You know what? Yeah, maybe we'll do that. We could spend 5 minutes on Kolaches next, like do a little Wikipedia on Kolaches. I decided yesterday as I was kind of coming out of my anesthetic funk, which was weird, Drew. For like a week, I feel like I was just kind of almost like hovering along through space and time. And I was completing all my daily tasks and chores well enough, but I felt just kind of detached from everything. But as I was texting you last night, because we were supposed to podcast at like 7 p.m., I just thought to myself, all right, I just gotta have fun on this podcast and just have a chat with Drew instead of trying to prepare for it like I'm doing my normal radio show or something. So that's what we'll do. We'll talk about Kolaches. And
it's something I know.
Yeah. I'm interviewing an author on Thursday of this week from a book that I've read called Spark. It's all about exercise and basically.
Oh yeah, I just started that.
Oh, that's right. I told you to do it. It's called Spark, the Revolutionary New Science of Exercise in the Brain by John Rady, who is a Harvard professor. I think he might be retired now, but he's a Harvard professor who wrote this book. And it's been kind of transformative for me because it's very much all about what exercise does for your brain, for your emotional well-being, how it just floods your brain with all these different neurotransmitters. It makes you more sensitive and to dopamine, like all this stuff. And because of that, like this is the most consistent I've ever been with exercise between this book and then this other book, Atomic Habits, that I read. Like when I exercise every day now, I don't think about the long-term benefits at all. I think very much about the short-term benefits of, oh, I'm going to feel better. It's going to help me think more clearly. I'm going to be more creative because of it. It's going to just help everything function better. And like, so now I can't not exercise. It's really cool. So I'm going to chat with John Rady tomorrow and try not to sound like a buffoon in front of this.
That's great. Professor. Thanks for comparing me to a Harvard professor who has transformed your life.
That's it. Yeah. It's pretty much you, Atomic Habits, and John Rady have transformed my life. And also some religious text or whatever. Whatever the best selling religious text is right now.
Yeah. Of the moment.
Yeah. Got it. All right, buddy. Thanks, man. I'll send you a Kolache out there in Charlotte. Where are you? What little suburb of Charlotte are you staying in? Are you in Charlotte proper?
Yeah, I'm in Charlotte proper. I'm in, technically it's called NODA is like the.
Wait. Okay. NODA.
Yeah. NODA.
So
yeah.
Is it north down? What is it?
See, it sounds like it would be like north downtown something, right?
Yeah, like Denver has Lodo, which is lower downtown, right? Houston has Edo, which is east downtown.
Yeah, it's NODA, so it's North Davidson, which is like the, I would compare it to like a Wicker Park in Chicago, or maybe like a sort of a Rainy Street kind of gentrified hipster.
Yeah. I don't think you get it. You don't get the four-letter acronym unless you're the trendy new spot in town.
That's all been
like a relatively new thing, like where some developer decides like, hey, what this place needs is an acronym.
Yeah. And we're good. So, yeah. It's good for me because I like to overspend on lattes and like hit on women that are way too young for me. So
you're turning into that guy.
Yeah, that's my identity.
There are, but there, I don't know. That's where Edo in Houston, actually, I'm trying to think of like that whole area. Yeah, like down near Minute Maid and everything. That's technically Edo. There, I've met a lot of people down there who are retired and just love it because like they can walk everywhere. It's like everything's very walkable. And now with Uber, I mean, I've met a lot of people who have retired and moved from the suburbs into the city now. And I think Uber is a big part of it. And then just like more walkable neighborhoods and they just, they're living the life. Like it's not bad. Don't be afraid to grow old in that neighborhood, Drew.
Thanks, Seth. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Or you can come live with us if you want. We're taking, I've decided I'm going to take in, cause I've known too many guys now that like all of a sudden when they get into their 40s, feel pressure to get married because they're starting to feel alone and all of their friends are married and everything.
Yeah. Totally not describing every day of my life.
But this is the problem though. I think what some guys like that need, like you,
pick up a hobby.
I think you need like an orphanage for middle-aged men. To where they can feel camaraderie, almost like a firehouse, feel to it and everything. But you know, so where like families can take these guys in, but they don't feel like necessarily rushed to find companionship or anything because they have more of a family atmosphere and feel. And you can, you know, do odd jobs around the house to earn your keep.
You're describing a sitcom premise, but also is this less depressing that you're describing? This feels worse.
Okay.
You're not talking to me off the ledge. You're like, jump, man. Just jump.
Drew, don't think of yourself as a charity case.
Yeah, exactly.
As a charity showcase. Yeah.
Look, you keep telling yourself a loser. And what I'm saying is you are a loser.
but you just gotta be comfortable with it.
But you just gotta own it. Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, man.
Right. I look forward to talking to you next week, hopefully.
Yeah, you too. I'm going to stew on that for the next 6 days.
All right. Thanks, man. Goodbye. Bye. Be well.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.